Recording has started.
Great. Thanks so much. Well, welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data Call on Wednesday, the 18th of July, 2018. On the call today, we do have Rebecca Tushnitz, Susan Payne, Christine Durain, Kathy Kleiman, and Michael Graham. We do have two guest speakers today, Greg Rayford and Stacey Chan from the Analysis Group. If anyone has joined the audio bridge only, would you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names. We also have no apologies from staff. We have Julie Headland, Ariel Liang, and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. And as a reminder, if you would please state your name so it appears clearly on the transcription. Thank you ever so much. And over to Julie Headland. Please begin.
Thanks so much, Michelle, and thanks, everyone, for joining today. Given that Susan can only join for the first 30 minutes, what we have today for the schedule and the agenda is to go through the revised surveys that were provided by the analysis group. And thank you all for the comments that you've put into the various Google Docs. I'm going to suggest that we start going through the comments in the registrar's Google Doc, just to maximize the time that we have with Susan, and let me know if there's any objections to that approach.
Actually, I'm really sorry, but there's not much point from my perspective because I'm afraid I haven't looked at it. I'm so sorry, but I have kind of dropped the ball, so I'm not really in a position to go through the registrar survey.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a number of comments in there. They're not from you. I think Christine had a number of comments in there. not to then put you on the spot, Susan, but to give you the opportunity to provide your input as we go through the comments that others have made, would you mind if we started with that, registrars? Again, saying not that you're leading it and not that we're looking to you for guidance on it, but just to make sure that we give you the opportunity to comment on anything that people have noted in the survey.
Okay, sure.
All right. Thank you very much for that. So everyone, since as we've done in the past, since it's difficult really to show the Google Docs and shared screen, we do have the links to them here if you look in the agenda pod. And so if you would like to go ahead to that survey, the registrar survey, in the Google Doc, and what I'll do is just do what I've done in the past, which is go to each of the comments where it looks like there needs to be some discussion, and then we'll just proceed in that way forward. So I'm looking at the registrar survey right now, and I'm noting that the first comment is from Christine Durain on question two, and I see Christine has her hand up, so please go ahead, Christine.
Thanks, and this is actually not even on question two. This is going to Stacey's comment in all of the surveys that it will take 15 to 20 minutes, and they think it might actually take longer. I've been through all the surveys, and I'm not sure how much we can cut. There was one survey where I thought we might be able to cut a little. So my suggestion is to people's expectations appropriately. We'll take, approximately 20 minutes. Get rid of the 15, say approximately, don't say an average because now you've been redundant, average approximately. Just say approximately 20 minutes. I don't know what else to do. I mean, maybe it'll take people 30, but if you're willing to commit 20, I think you're willing to commit 30. But I think if you say 15 to 20, you set the expectation that 20 is the outside rather than just setting it at 20, and if people are willing to go in for 20, they'll go in for 25. That's my only suggestion here because I just don't know what else can go. We've already just sort of limited as much as we can. Open to debate or discussion on that. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Christine. I have Michael and then Greg and Stacey. Michael, please.
Michael Graham for the record. Sort of on that point as well, in going through the various surveys, one challenge, especially as a trademark owner, again, is that information that I'm being asked for is not necessarily information that I have at my fingertips, but as I come to each of the questions, it's information that I would then have to turn to either a file, a computer, or to a service provider to get that information. And I'm just wondering, and I'll put this out there for Greg and Stacy as well, if you found a means, either using a worksheet or something else, that would enable people who are taking the survey to go, oh, this is the information I need, let me go and get it. They get all the information, then they do the survey. Obviously, it takes a little bit more time, but especially when that information that we're asking survey takers to provide is not necessarily on the tip of their tongue or their mind, I see that as sort of a challenge, both in time and in providing the correct information, and then also in the frustration level of getting into a survey, having these questions, I keep having to go outside of the survey to get the information. I get frustrated, I just put it aside and don't answer it. So if you all have any suggestion, I would be very, very happy to hear that. Thanks.
Oh, thanks, Michael. And Greg, Stacy?
Yeah, this is Greg for the record. I can kick it off, but Stacy, of course, you should feel free to chime in. I think that's a really good point. I mean, you know, as the survey is kind of currently constructed, they can come back to the survey, but they would have to start at the beginning, which obviously isn't ideal. If we have specific contact information for that individual, then we can give them a password that they can use to access the survey, and then they can enter into the survey multiple times. So that's at least one possibility. I'm sure there are others. I think I'd want to think a little bit more about it, and we can circle back with you all, but I do realize that that could be an issue. I think the easiest fix is just providing each respondent with a password so that they can come back, but we can think about other potentially more creative solutions. Just in terms of the length of the various surveys, so obviously not every individual is going to have to answer every single question in the survey depending upon how they answer the specific questions, but just as an example, so the trademark survey, there in theory are some trademark owners that would end up answering 56 questions. If you assume, and some of those are open text fields, so if you assume about a minute per question, that's almost an hour for the survey, which is an incredibly long survey. So I think that's our concern there. And like I said, not every single trademark or respondent for the trademark survey obviously is not going to have to answer all 56 questions, but even if they only saw 40 of those questions, that's still probably something like a 40 or 45 minute long survey, which I would be surprised if many people actually make it through, especially if they're having to kind of go back and, identify information that they may not have readily available. The registry survey, in theory, some registries could have to answer 40 questions, which once again is a pretty long survey. The registrar survey, I think, is a little bit more contained. The max number of questions there is about 33. So I think that's a little bit better, but I think in the registry and for the registry and trademark surveys, they're still pretty long. And so I recognize that kind of the interest in asking all of the questions and getting all of the data, but I think our worry is that just kind of given the current length, you're going to see a lot of dropout.
Oh, thanks, Greg. And I'm just noting a question in the chat from Christine is, why not make a PDF of the questions and allow respondents to preview the questions? So, I see Christine has her hand up. Please go ahead, Christine.
Hi, this is Christine. I take your point. I mean, even if it doesn't take a full minute to read the questions, even if it takes 20 seconds to read quick yes or no, I mean, you're still 40 questions is a lot, and your brain's like, why am I doing this? We're between a rock and a hard place. Our commitment to the full working group is that we're going to come back with this data, and they're going to beat us up if we come back with just yes or no questions that don't have any follow-up. So we have to ask. So I don't know the best way to do it, and we're probably pretty far down the path to think of this, but I don't know if there's a way to think about a different way to order questions or breaking it up into smaller surveys, pieces, surveying some people on claims and some people on for trademark owners because there's so many. Do you want to take a claim survey? Do you want to take a sunrise survey? Maybe you can split it up. I don't know what that does to the cost. But I think there are brand owners out there who desperately want to contribute information if we make it easy enough for them to do it. And I think that's my question is, are there ways that we can creatively ask the most important questions first? So if people drop out, we get those answers first. you know, all the yes or no questions are first, and then we're gonna dive deeper in follow-ups. You said yes. What did you mean? I don't know if there are ways to be creative about that. I see Lori say if we can support the yes or no, it's worth the beating. But you know as well as I do, Lori, that we're going to think we can support it, and there will be 10 people clamoring to tell us that we're making up data and it's false facts and we're just making it up and we need actual hard numbers from a survey, even if we believe we can support it. That's my concern. Anyone else?
I see Lori's hands up. Lori, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, hi, it's Lori Shulman for the record. Yeah, so I was just about to write into the chat, and I'm going to be as direct and honest as I can be. I have made these interventions throughout my recruitment to this group verbally. I'm not sure, do I need to write summary in writing? I don't know. But I am super concerned that we have fallen down the same rabbit hole that we fell down with the CCTRT. And I'm speaking on behalf of INTA fully now, in that we were asked to gather very involved, very complex data. We went out of our way to support what we thought the intention was of the work group. While there were certainly some flaws in the design and execution of the actual survey, I do believe that some of that was absolutely due to feeling that we were bound to, you know, the work group is. But if the work group interests do not produce usable results, we have to challenge the work group assumptions. And I've been saying this all along, that I have a super concern about the detail of the questions, the length, what we're really trying to get at. Because what we're trying to get at in so many cases is just ungettable. And I particularly feel this way on the trademark side, because we know from our experience with the INTA survey that trademark owners are not keeping records in a way that supports the detail that I can't ask for. And in terms of the registrant's answers, which I have expressed, I think, two or three calls ago, that how we're actually going to sort the world out into registrants who can confidently answer these questions, I just do not know, absent engaging registrars who can have the surveys, you know, sent to people who have just received a claim notice. I'm doubting this whole methodology. And while I support what we're trying to do and the multi-stakeholder model and the spirit in which we're trying to find this information, I still find myself in a very cynical place. And I think that I get Christine's point. If we go back with yes and no, the work group's going to say we're subverting the mission. To carry out the mission the way we've been instructed, I don't see us getting good results. And I would like to hear analysis group argue with me and tell me I'm wrong. Because right now, I'm not even hearing that.
Yeah, this is Greg. I think you're right, Lori.
So now what do we do? I mean, that's a big problem, and now is the time, I think, for real leadership here. I'm trying to think of creative ways. I think looking at the questions prior might be very helpful, that if people agree to take the survey, we allow them a few minutes to look before they're actually in the survey environment. That could be helpful. I absolutely think we have to prioritize these questions. We have to decide what is the most important to the work group. Without that prioritization, I think we're going to end up, again, with people dropping out even if they've seen the questions.
Thanks, Lori. And I have a queue here. I have Michael, Rebecca, and Kathy. Michael, please.
Thanks. Michael Graham for the record. I take your point, Lori, and I think it's accurate. There are a couple ways to think about it, one of which we haven't really thought about, and I guess we'd be interested in Greg and Stacy's opinion of it, but it's something that I know that we do at Expedia when we send out the user review requests. So after you take a trip, you get one of those obnoxious little emails that says, hey, what did you think about the trip, and asks you to give a number of stars. And it sort of creates two paths. One, it creates a path of people who are just going to do the star, and if that's all you're going to do and you're not willing to give more information, fine, we'll take the stars. If you are willing to give more information, it goes into a more extended survey. that's something that we have not done, looking at these questions, which ones can we limit it to yes or no, and if there's a way to invite the survey takers to self-elect. Are you willing to do a full survey, or do you just want to give some yes-no answers? That would provide more information in terms of participants. Obviously, it wouldn't give as much information as if they answered all the questions, but I wonder if that might be a course to think about. Of course, then all of us who have one of these sections would have to go back and take a look and see how that might be structured. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Rebecca, please.
Rebecca Tushnet. Thank you. I have limited opinions on the trademark owner surveys. I just want to object in the strongest possible terms to the tarring of the registrant and potential registrant surveys. Lori's objection is clearly, at least in part, to the idea of having that survey at all. And first of all, it's a lot shorter. You may have noticed that that the objections were not raised as to the length of that. So I think that's a false comparison, right? These are very different surveys. And second of all, as I think has been repeatedly pointed out, the registrant and potential registrant survey is a standard consumer survey methodology designed to be aimed at potential consumers, right, which is accepted, you know, both internally and by courts. And to the extent that she's objecting to the idea of asking people not at the point of receiving a claims notice about what they would do or what they have done, I want to defend that in the strongest possible terms. Now is not the time to relitigate that decision, and in fact, there is no basis for doing so. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Kathy, please.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, we've talked about this before, and at this point, we've spent months on these surveys, months on these questions. It's time to get them out. My sense is we've used enormous amounts of the analysis group's time. I really appreciate what Greg and Stacy have given us. My guess is we're way over budget on that. So if we want to get these out, let's go. I'll note that the registries and registrars have a special reason to answer, right? They're contracted parties. And regulated industries, and don't quote me on this, but these guys are kind of regulated industries. They're quasi-regulated industries. They're regulated by contract through ICANN. They've got an incentive to do it. These types, you know, we look at regulated industries and talk to them a lot in other areas. So they have an incentive to answer. As Rebecca said, the registrant survey is short, sweet. I mean, it's very targeted. So it's the trademark owner survey. So let me suggest this. Would this work? That for the trademark owners, before they go into the survey, I'm not sure I'd give them a PDF because, you know, they may look at it and want to turn around. You know, part of it is being guided through these things, right? Maybe put in something targeted like, what type of trademark owner, what type of counsel should answer this? And what type of facts should they bring in when they come to answer these questions? So that they have a checklist up front of what they should be bringing in. They're still invited to come in if they don't have it, but what would make it easiest and fastest for them to go through? What facts will they need as they come into the survey so they can come out the fastest? But we got, you know, if we're going to use any of this work from all the last few, you know, from the last many months, we got to get these surveys out so we can get them back into the discussion because we're on a time crunch from the council. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Susan, please.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, it's Susan. With regard to providing some kind of a version up front or some ability to see how many questions you have to answer before you wade in, I actually I sort of am going to slightly disagree with you, Kathy. I can see what you say. If you can see how many questions you're going to be asked, it can be off-putting, and you might turn around and go. But I can assure you that from having done these surveys multiple times when I've been in in-house counsel, that that I'm extremely put off by starting a survey and then realizing that I can't go forward and see how long it's going to take me. You know, if someone says to me my survey is going to take 10 minutes and I'm sort of 8 minutes in and I can't see any light at the end of the tunnel, then that's the point at which I just fail out. And so I really think it's important to be able to see how much time you have to spend on this and to be able to take your own view on whether, you know, whether you can start this and get it done or whether you need to come back to it another time. I really do.
Thank you. Susan and Michael, please.
Yeah, Michael Graham again for the record. I do think that it's important that we have some sort of guidance on the questions. I'm sort of going a different path, Lori, than you, insofar as I think the questions we're asking here, at least on the trademark owner side, and that's really the one I focused on, so I'll limit my comments to that, are more general or doable type of information than we were asking, which was extremely specific in terms of financial figures of trademark owners for the CCTRT survey. So I think this is a little bit less difficult or intimidating, but I do agree with Susan that I really need to see these, especially having had the explanation from Greg that once you enter the survey, if you leave it to get that information, you have to start at the beginning. I'm not going to do that. Once I leave and I come back and find out I've got to do it all over again, that's it. I'm going to be going away. So I think we need to provide the opportunity for survey takers, at least those where we have the more specific information that we're seeking, to actually look at that ahead of time, be able to put together the information, and then when they go through, they're just filling in the blanks. They're not having to analyze it. So thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Rebecca, please.
My apologies, old hand.
Thank you. And then to the questions in the chat, yes, we were starting with the registrar survey, and I think we need to get that back to the specific surveys to address the comments in them. But I think there is a discussion here of the overall length of the survey. The trademark survey is the longest. And so I think at least the analysis group could consider the suggestion of having an option to see a PDF up front. I mean, I think we could make it as an option if people want to do it or not. I know surveys that I've worked on within ICANN and the ICANN community, generally respondents have been in favor of being able to preview questions because they have a better sense of how long it's going to take them, even if you say it's 20 minutes or it's 56 questions or whatever. The taker is probably in a better position to decide if they have a chance to look at the questions. So perhaps we'll pass that suggestion over to you, Greg and Stacy. And then there's some also in the chat, Kathy is saying, would it make sense to say who should consider answering a survey for a registry, registrar, or trademark owner and say what data they might consider bringing? Michael's noting he'd like to be able to reduce the length of the trademark owner survey but need fresh eyes to review in light of the questions we're trying to address. And Christine, please.
Hi, this is Christine. I just wanted to throw one more idea into the mix as far as the length of the trademark owner survey, because I get it. It's going to be useless if they answer the first 10 questions and then bail, because now we've got nothing, which is the same as we started with. So I agree with Kathy that it's time to get going, get them out, but if they're not going to answer anything past 20, that means that all of 20 through 40, regardless of how much time and effort we've put on them, are not going to be answered. There we have zero data on trademark claims, nothing. So we've thrown out a couple of options, and I don't know if we need to take this to the list so we can actually get through the survey itself. But one option is to present a preview. One option is to present a full short survey for trademark holders, it'll be Sunrise, Reserve Names, and Claims. But for registry operators, it's Sunrise and Claims, and registrars, it's Sunrise and Claims. And then ask people, are you willing to take a second, subsequent, deeper survey on some of these issues? The third option that hasn't been floated yet, but I'm going to throw it out there now, is to say this entire survey could take up to 40 minutes, but you can do it in batches, and you do allow people to come back. And I know Greg says you'd have to provide a password, but maybe you can start with that as a default option. And there are three sections for the trademark owners, for instance. Sunrise, we're going to ask you about reserve names. We're going to ask you about claims. And so we just ask that you complete, you know, each individual section when you have time. Each section will take 15 minutes. Now, I think there are opportunities and ways to present it from those three groups of people, registries, registrars, and brand owners, that could break it up a little bit more if that's something that's technologically feasible. But I think we cannot just shove the survey out there if we have solid opinions from analysis group that people are not going to answer, because we're going to be back to square one again with no data, which is better than crappy data, maybe, possibly.
Thank you, Christine. And I see Lori is saying that that suggestion makes sense. Susan is saying, you know, perhaps have an option to click here for questions on claims or on Sunrise, something like that. And Greg and Stacy, let me ask if you have any thoughts on how, whether or not this would be a feasible option to allow the survey takers to take the survey in sections, and whether or not we could have an option. I know you mentioned having the password option, but would we be able to set that up, say, for all respondents if people did indicate that they wanted to do the survey in batches?
So I think we'll need to circle back with the kind of the online survey provider, but I'm pretty sure that we can offer that as an option. I think it would be kind of a two-step process where an individual would kind of indicate their interest in taking the survey. They would need to email us, and then we would provide them with a password. That's probably the easiest approach that would then allow them to come back multiple times and complete the survey, assuming that they wanted to do so. And I think my initial reaction to the kind of the two-part survey, so there's kind of the, you know, there's the shorter kind of survey that hits the high-level points, and then they can indicate an interest in taking kind of a longer form version. I think that certainly sounds reasonable to me, but I think to some extent we'll leave it up to the data subteam as to whether or not that's going to get you the information that will ultimately be useful.
Thank you, Greg. And this is Julie Hedlund again from staff. So at the risk of further delaying by doing a complete rewrite of having like a shorter and then a longer survey, I'm wondering if the other approach, which I'm seeing some support for in the chat, of having the surveys just broken up by the way the, you know, the claims, Sunrise, et cetera, the way the questions I think are already organized, and then doing the password approach, you know, assuming that we'd be able to do that, and Greg, of course, we understand that you need to check on that, but perhaps that might avoid doing a complete sort of rewrite or prioritization of the surveys, given the need to get these out. And Greg is saying, I think that would be doable and easiest. So let's go ahead and take that as an action. And a fourth option, Christine says, separate surveys. Trademark owners get three links. They can take as many as they'd like. I guess that's a question back to Christine. You have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Christine. I just wanted to explain. I know we're not deciding right now, so I'm basically just brainstorming. So let's say you break up the actual survey, into the trademark survey, into three, the Sunrise survey, the reserve name survey, and the claim survey. You say, hey, you've been identified to take this survey. We've got three different areas that we'd like to know more about. You know, if you're interested in providing information on Sunrise, take this survey. If you're interested in providing information on reserve names. And what you'll get is people who are super interested in that topic. If people do not give a flying rat's patootie about, and that for the transcript is spelled P-A-T-O-O-T-I-E, if they don't care about talking about claims, then they're not going to answer that survey. And that's fine, and then they won't waste that time. And you can get, and then people can take, you know, take it in small bites, but we get the whole survey then, and we don't get zero data on part of it unless the person says, I really don't want to offer my opinion on this section, in which case it's just a valid, you know, choosing not to participate. Thanks.
Thank you. And Kathy?
First, I think we are making the decision now because these do have to go out. But to Christine, I can understand people wanting to go back, but to only picking the sections that you want, let's ask the analysis group. In that case, as Christine said, you're only going to get those who are very, very interested in a particular area and probably have distinct experiences. I mean, will it be a skewed survey if you don't, you know, if you don't kind of have the whole breadth? Because some trademark owners will be interested in X, some will be interested in Y. Isn't is that something that, that should be reflected in the survey as well? You know, will picking and choosing areas to respond to distort in any way what we're getting back?
Thanks, Kathy. Greg or Stacey, any comments on that?
Yeah, that's a good question, Kathy. I mean, I think it has the possibility of doing that, but I think what you might see, you know, if you were in a world where they had to take the entire survey, is they just might skip those questions anyway. So I guess it doesn't cause me a lot of concern, this idea of kind of splitting the survey into separate parts, but I'd like to think about that a little more, I think. Stacey, I don't know if you have any.
Thanks very much. Yes, that'd be great if you could do that and if you had any further comments for us. And Susan, I see you have your hand up, and I know you have to leave shortly, so please go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, you know, fundamentally in what we've decided to ask questions on, we've already done some skewing if you want to view it that way. I mean, we already decided we're not asking questions about the TMCH or we're not asking questions about the URS, so we already kind of, you know, it's intrinsic in this that we've already decided we're only surveying on Sunrise and Claims. So, you know, if someone only answers questions on Sunrise, well, so be it. I mean, you know, those people may have had extensive views on the URS, but we haven't asked them that. So I think I'm not sure it matters. I think if that's the way to make sure that we get something rather than nothing, I think that's something we have to live with.
Thank you, Susan. Lori, and then Rebecca.
Yes, hi, this is Lori for the record. I want to substantiate, I think Kathy's point is right on target, and that this is a problem that INTA had, and we did require all takers to answer all questions or the survey was considered invalid. And we had to make a decision. If we had to make that same decision again, I don't think we would from a learning perspective. So I think from that case, if we can learn from the past, although it might, and I don't know if you can statistically somehow allow for this, it might skew something one way or the other. I do tend to sit on the side that more is better than nothing. But I'm very interested actually in hearing Rebecca's opinion about this as well.
Thank you, Lori. Rebecca, please.
Rebecca Tushnet, thank you. So, I mean, there are two kinds of bias. So it is true that asking about something is different than not asking about it, but I think that introduces a very different kind of bias, which is, you know, we know we asked about one thing and not about another, versus asking only people with strong opinions, which, again, you know, I think is pretty clearly going to change the kind of responses that you get in ways that may well be troubling. So, you know, if we're going this direction, I would much prefer looking into randomization and say, okay, you know, we're going to give you, you know, if you qualify, we're going to give you one set of questions and not another, because that has much less potential to bias. Now, it may be that you then need to qualify people differently, so there is that. You will get a data set of people answering the questions, but it will be a data set of people who care a lot about the issue, and that will just be different. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm not seeing anybody else in queue. I'm going to suggest that we go back into the surveys. We've got less than an hour left on this particular call, and see if we can get through them to answer any of the questions or comments that are in there. And we had started with registrars, so I suggest we go back to that. Then we have the comment on question two, which is, in what country is registrar located? Christine is making the suggestion to say headquartered instead. Are there any objections to that suggestion? And Michael, please go ahead.
Yeah, Michael, for the record, I just have a general question. I mean, the phrasing of the question is, what registrar do you represent in Q1? Second one, in what country is your registrar located? Now, I presume we're trying to speak with people who are employed by or related to a registrar, so I wonder if we just might make these both more direct. But I do think, if nothing else, you know, headquartered probably would be the best thing because registrars do have various offices. But I'm just wondering about the phrasing of this, and I think I did bring that up in the trademark questionnaire as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And I'm not sure if I understand what you're suggesting. Are you suggesting a different phrasing or?
Yeah, sort of the question of, what registrar are you answering for or something are you employed by? I mean, I presume this is going to the registrar, so we're asking the registrar, and this is being answered by someone there representing them. So I guess that first question is correct. But I do agree with Christine's comment to change located to something like headquartered or something along those lines.
Okay. Thank you. Then I guess unless there's any other questions, just moving to the next comment. And I see that Christine has made a change on question 8 to change less to fewer, which I think is more grammatically correct, so I don't think that's an issue. Here we have a question on Q12 from Stacy on, we are happy to adjust these options, asking multiple choice rather than an open-ended, how long should the period be may ease burden of the respondent. Christine is saying, I like these options. So if folks could look at the options on presented on Q12, so that would be multiple choice as opposed to open-ended. Does anybody have any questions about those options? I'm not seeing any hands up. So moving along to question 18, which is, please describe your experience, if anywhere, administration of the claims service was difficult, an open text field. Stacy notes, we understand the relevance of this question, however, it has the potential to be seen as a request for a narrative, which can require a lengthy response and may make it difficult for respondents to complete. If a closed-ended alternative, e.g. multiple choice, is not possible, you may want to consider making the wording of this question more specific. So it elicits a succinct but useful response from respondents, and Christine is saying, change describe to briefly explain or summarize briefly. Most people will probably leave this blank as other than onboarding and pre-order. I haven't heard of issues around claims. This is just a catch-all for the person who has something to say, I think. So we have a wording suggestion there, but I'm thinking actually, so wording suggestion there. Does anybody have any? And I see Michael is agreeing with Christine's comment and doesn't see that this provides useful data for review. And Michael, please go ahead.
That was just a clarification. My comment was on question 19 and not 18. And Christine, I apologize. I removed your comment when I clicked on resolve instead of reply. But my comment was on 19, where I'm not sure what this is addressing. If it's addressing a specific question that we were asked to get data on, that's fine. Otherwise, I'm not sure what information this is going to be useful in providing. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Christine, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. My comment that Michael agreed with when he resolved it was that I think we're not asking for a query here. At what point in the registration process do you query whether the domain name is registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse? I think that's a little bit important because that goes back to this pre-order. So do you query it, I don't know, right before you tell the customer can have it? But really, I think what we're getting at here is sort of cart abandonment issues, right? So what we really want to know is at what point in the registration process you are providing the customer with the claims notice, displaying it, emailing it to them, whatever it is. I don't think it matters at all when they query when the domain is registered. Do they do it at the beginning of the transaction when the Whois lookup is done? Do they do it when they're offering their upsell purchase items? Do they do it at the moment they take the credit card? I don't think we care when the query happens. I think we care when the display of the claims notice happens because this is the claims notice question. So that was what I was saying, and that was the point that Michael was agreeing with. Thanks.
Thank you. So, this is Julia, then, how should we reword this? to get to that point? Do you have a suggestion?
This is Christine again. I think it's just display the claims notice. At what point in the registration process do you display the claims notice to the potential customer? When the domain name is placed in the cart, when payment is attempted, I would actually add to that, you know, at the time of Whois lookup, at the of, you know, account creation, you know, and then leave other, I guess. But I think at that point, I think what we're really trying to get at is when is the claims notice displayed, I think. Because I think the other, if we get into the, I mean, question 17 goes to challenges when sending the claims notice for pre-order names. And we give them an open text field to talk about any challenges. So that would be where they have problems getting that claims notice after the sunrise period starts or after the general availability starts. But at the time that they're trying to give the domain name to the customer. So I think question 17 really captures that querying versus getting that information to the customer. I think question 19 deals with as much as we can do on cart abandonment. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Kathy, please.
Agree with Christine. Agree. Keeping this question is really important and revising it. So, Christine, everybody, the options would be when the domain names are placed in the cart, when payment is attempted. What else? I think account creation was mentioned, but we're not going to be matching domain names and trademarks at account creation, not the accounts I'm thinking of where you kind of create a general account with the registry. That's just kind of name, address, billing information. So are there any other options that we need to include, or does this kind of, with the open text field, does this get us at least to kind of summoning up of, you know, asking the registrars to answer a really important question?
Thank you, Kathy. Christine, please.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine. I will I'm going to talk a little slower than I normally do to let Ariel take notes. It looks like she's doing a really good job, though. So we have, when the registration process, the customer will do a Whois lookup. They will then usually select the domain name with the TLD that they want. Then they will their cart. At that point, they may be prompted to offer to add upsell purchases like hosting or privacy protection or other services. And this can be hit or miss with the other thing, the next thing I'm going to say. So that during that upsell time might be the time at which they are, you know, showing the claims notice, like before they do the upsell. Then they're being asked to either log into their registrar account, or they're being asked to create an account with that registrar if they don't have an account already. Then, so that's when they enter their billing and contact and admin information. At that point, again, they may be presented with upsell items, but they may have already been presented with them. It kind of depends how that registrar has configured their systems. Then they will sort of present the terms in the click-through agreement, which is another point at which that claims notice might be displayed. It might be displayed as part of your click-through agreement. It might be displayed as part of the gathering of that billing information or that renewal information. Do you want this for a year or 10 years? And then at the very end, they're going to actually check out. And so then is it displayed just before checkout or just after checkout? I don't think we need all of those options, but I thought I think it helps if we think about the entire process and where some logical places might be. I think people display the claims notice just before they do the checkout piece. So I think they would typically do it just before checkout. But I think we want to provide a couple other options, like when the domain name is selected, when the domain name is added to the cart, or when they are presenting the terms. So those are some options I think that we might want to consider. Hopefully I talked slow enough. It looks like Ariel's done a good job with her note-taking. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. I think we've tried to capture that. And then just back to the survey, there was one last question from Kathy on question 20. There's some text inserted. Would you and or your resellers be willing to provide anonymous surveys to domain name applicants to understand what influences their decisions? And, Kathy, I see you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I saw that Christine put in the word anonymous of having tried to do anonymous speech for years and worked with anonymous speakers. It's really hard to do anonymous anything, as everybody here knows. So, Christine, did you really mean anonymous or something like, you know, where we promise to keep your information, you know, where we promise to anonymize the results?
And, Kathy, Christine is saying totally agree with anonymize in the chat.
Okay, great.
Great,
okay,
thanks.
Thanks.
Wonderful. Thanks, everyone. We have made it to the end of the registrar survey. I think that we have gathered the information we need there. Unless I see any objections, I'm going to suggest we go on to the registry operator survey. And Christine, please.
Thank you. This is Christine. I just wanted, because this is going to come up in the registrar survey as well, and I don't know if we can sort of invent an entirely new way of taking the survey here, but one of the ways we could possibly shorten the survey a bit is combining the Q4G and Q6 tables, because those are, they ask the same types of questions only for different time periods. So if there's a way to have the user presented with that table one time, that would be great. Now, I had some suggestions for how that might happen, but again, I am not a survey expert and I have not created the technology, but I have to think there's a way to say, show them the table one time and say, what would you answer if it was 30? What would you answer if it was whatever number you selected? That I think would be less intimidating, and it would really crunch up what I think, at least for this survey and the registry survey, is the most sort of like brain intensive part of the survey. The rest of it's pretty simple. This doesn't really address some of the other survey concerns, but I think for the registry and registrar surveys, I'm not sure if analysis group can go back to the drawing board on these two, but I think if there's a way to consolidate this whole section for both surveys, we could save some time and brain power for people. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. So I'm looking at Q4G in the registrar survey, and you were then suggesting to have this table. I mean, right now the question is, how do you think a 30-day sunrise period is likely to affect the following factors? And then we have the table, and then we have I'm sorry, please go ahead, Christine. I'm not following, obviously.
Yeah, thanks. No, that's okay. So, I'm getting terrible. I'm going to unconnect and reconnect. Is that better? Oh, okay. I had a horrible feedback for a second there. Okay, so Q4. Okay, good. Q4, so this whole question is about the duration of the sunrise period. How long should it be? 30 days, 60 days, et cetera. So if you get to Q4, you say, hey, 30-day sunrise, what are the good things it's doing? Is it affecting cyber squatting sunrise, et cetera? Then we say, gosh, what do you think? Should sunrise be shorter or longer? How would it affect those same factors? I think there's a way to say, how's it doing now? What do you think it should be? And in what ways would it affect your answers if you change it to whatever you think it should be? I think there's some way, and really smart people can figure it out, to combine, crunch all of that into one thing that would be a lot less mental work for people. That's what I'm trying to say. So Q4G and Q6, the tables.
Yeah, and this is Greg. I think that's a good suggestion, Christine. So why don't we give some thought to it and see what we can do to combine those two questions in some artful way.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
Great. Thanks. I think that that it would also combine then, by necessity, it would also combine Q5, which I think is awesome. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg, for that. Thank you, Christine, also. Then I think that we can now leave the registrar survey and move to the registry survey. And the first item there, Q2, approximately how many non-brand new GTLDs do you operate? Christine is saying 6 questions are for Geo community or Founders Program users. Those are a pretty small minority of TLDs. If we can find a way to merge the two sets of table questions. And Christine, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Julie. That comment actually was another one that goes to the survey length. So my point here was exactly the point I just made, which is that there are 20-something questions overall, 27 or something. if we can do the table combination thing on this survey also, which when they sort of crunch up three questions into one, and then six of the questions in the survey are specifically for Geo Community or Founders Program users, which is a super small minority of the community, that means that the average user will only take 20 questions. That was what I was trying to say. That was my point on the length of the survey. Question two was just about clarifying about the back end, and that is because when it says non-brand new GTLD, it's do you operate? So if, let's say, VeriSign gets this, VeriSign, or let's say Neustar, and, you know, Neustar has its own new Gs that it runs, but it's also back-end for a bunch. I think that we all understand what we're talking about, but we may want to be crystal clear for users that when we talk about operate, we mean as the registry operator, not as the back-end. So we only want to hear from you about your, you know, the actual TLDs you are a registry operator for, not the ones you're the back-end registry operator for. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. And Greg and Stacey, do you have any questions concerning Christine's suggestion? I know we already talked about combining the tables, but also so if we can combine the table questions similarly to registrars, then that shortens the survey. Does that suggestion again make sense to you, Greg and Stacey?
It does, yes. But thanks for asking.
Thank you. And we'll capture the change for question two. Moving down, we have a text change on question six. Please provide your average pricing across all TLDs. Any objections to that change? And then with that, Christine says, registry operators with more than one TLD may have widely varied pricing per TLD, so we need to not only average pricing tiers, but also TLDs, so that's the explanation for that change. And then also deleting open numeric field, since that actually follows those sub-bullets, I gather. At question eight, there's some edits, and Christine notes questions 10 and 11 are a logical follow-on to question 7, so I think they should go next. Question 8 and question 9 will only apply to a small subset of respondents, and I think that gets back to your earlier comment, Christine. And Christine, go ahead, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, so just to explain, so in question 7, we're talking about pricing brand names as premium names, and one sort of way that you could do that is set aside names, premium names as reserve names and release them later as higher price names. So really, if you think about like your average survey taker, question 5, 6, 7, then you jump basically to question 10, what about reserve names lists, has registry place reserve names on its list? So questions 10 and 11 are really for everybody. Questions 8 and 9 are for a really small micro subset. So my suggestion is you go straight from 7 to 10 and 11 and then ask 8. And then, of course, if they don't qualify for 8 and 9, if they do qualify for 8 and 9, then they'll ask the add-on questions after what's currently 10 and 11. And if not, then nobody sees 8 and 9, and they just jump straight to question 12. That's sort of what I was trying to get at there, if that makes sense to analysis group. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, and Greg and Stacey, does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
Thank you. Christina has made a number of textual suggestions. Unless there's any concerns with those. Moving to question 9 on the text to better accommodate restricted TLDs, Stacey's asking, can you provide alternate wording? We think this is rather vague, but lack the expertise to clarify it. So the question is, there's a filter that goes into this, and then should the ICANN brand protection policies like Sunrite or claims be altered to better accommodate restricted TLDs like community or GeoTLDs? And Christine, please go ahead.
So this is Christine. I think in this specific case, because we are talking about the people who are going to see question 9 are the people who have said we operate a GEO or a community TLD. So now they're being asked more than 0 GEO TLDs or community TLDs. So now these people who already offer these sorts of TLDs are asked, should you basically be given the opportunity to alter Sunrise and claims to accommodate your restrictions? And then we actually say, like community or GEO TLDs. I think because we've already targeted this question down to the specific pointed audience, I think that we're not going to worry about the vagueness of the wording because I think people will get it because we've not only said, you know, we're only going to show some people this question, but then we're clarifying with the parenthetical by saying like community or GEO TLDs. So I don't know that we need to add more unless I'm not understanding Stacey's question. Thanks.
Thank you.
No, I think this is Greg, and that's a helpful clarification, and so I think we can leave it as is.
Great, thanks. Then moving to 10A, we have a comment that need additional choices. And can we, Stacey's asking, can the subteam provide suggested options? Do subteam folks have some other suggestions for text here? Right now it is, why not? Please note that you can select multiple options, select all that apply, and there right now is only one option. Such publication would violate local laws. Are there other options that we can present here? Or, yes, okay, please, Christine.
Thanks, this is Christine. I apologize, somehow I just missed this. I think I was thinking about the reordering and forgot to actually look at the detail on these two. So our specific answer is addressing a specific use case, which is one of our subteams is convinced that publishing their reserve names list would violate local laws. I think that would be an extremely small minority of jurisdictions. Would you support it? If not, why not? I think the main reason, the primary argument that registry operators are going to use for not publishing is the list is a trade secret, and it provides others at a provides competitors with an advantage or places themselves at a competitive disadvantage, and it opens them up to sort of, I don't know, I'm trying to word it neutrally. It opens them up to sort of claims that they're sort of, I guess, warehousing brands or whatever. I suppose that's the argument for brand owners as to why it should be published. I'm hesitant to put answers in people's mouths. I would really like people to have an open forum here. And one of the things that came to mind when I first saw this is, other than the fact that one specific team member believes that this publication would violate local laws, I don't see any advantage to putting a drop down here. I feel like just let people list all their reasons, and the people who believe it would violate their local laws can type that in here. I know we're trying to avoid open text fields, but I just feel like suggesting things here is going to open up kind of a pretty big can of worms. Anyone else think anything about that?
I'm not seeing any other hands up. Kathy is typing, and Lori is typing. But I guess if there were no objections, Lori, I think we need a menu of choices and not a blank one, and not one and blank. Now, I think there were some things that, now that Christine had offered, right, and that one choice is maybe one. It's from maybe one jurisdiction. Kathy says, AG, okay with another text field. And we have a few suggestions and an open text field. I mean, there were some other options, trade secret, provide competitor advantage.
Yeah, this is Greg. I think I'd be inclined to have some of the options that Christine was ticking through, but then we can, of course, provide just an open text field if they want to insert something else.
Thanks, Greg. Well, we have tried to capture in the notes a few of those options, so we'll get those to you. So some options and then open text combination. Lori's, I think more options are better. You know, alternatively, Kathy says such publication would violate local laws, trade secret, or reluctance to post competitive data, and then an open field. Okay. So we've got that. and thank you for that. And we'll get that in the notes. Just moving along to question 13. And here we have the issue of the tables. And go ahead, Christine.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say you don't have to bother summarizing it. It's the table question. We can skip ahead. Thanks.
Perfect. That's wonderful. And then I have, let's see, for question 15, Christine suggests a new wording to mirror previous question. I believe changing the mandatory sunrise period will have the following impact on. So let me know if there's any objections to that suggestion. Question 16 is premature. We haven't even discussed claims yet, so move to last. And Christine, please.
Hi, this is Christine again. I think I've universally made this suggestion. I believe this question or a variant is on registry, registrar, and brand owner. And it's, I don't think it makes any sense to talk about sunrise and then say, well, what do you think? Should we have a sunrise or claims, sunrise and claims, just sunrise? And we haven't even talked about claims yet. I feel like this is a concluding question that says, now that we've taken the entire survey and we've talked about sunrise and claims and all the things that are good and bad and you've thought about both of these, what do you think the best outcome is? That we keep sunrise, we move sunrise, you know, you keep claims, we keep both, we get rid of both. I think this is a concluding question, and I think I don't need to change it. It just needs to go at the end. Thanks.
Thanks, and I see some agreement for that from Michael, and Greg and Stacey also agree. Kathy, please go ahead.
I'm going to put down my hand. I thought I had something on Q15, but let's keep moving. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And then on Q17, Christine says Q17 should probably follow Q18 and be reworded as this is hard to follow suggestions in line. And we have the suggested text there. And I'm just going to ask if anybody has any concerns about that suggested text. Otherwise, I'm going to move on. And here for Q18, Christine has added several options in response to Greg's request. And moving to Q21, Greg says term, which is interact, is rather vague, hoping you could suggest a wording change. So Q21 currently reads, how, if at all, did your limited registration period, approved launch program, or qualified launch program interact with the sunrise period? Any suggestions for an alternate term in this case? Christine, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. I'm not sure that there's a one-word answer. I think it would involve sort of a rewrite of the question, which basically said, did you face any challenges in operating both your limited registration period, approved launch program, or qualified launch program, and the mandatory period? Did you face any challenges in operating both your same list and the mandatory sunrise period? That's my suggestion. Kathy?
Kathy, please.
Yeah, now I want to go back to Q17, if I might, because we're going through this really fast. Christine, let me, your new addition, I'm going to just read it and see if this makes sense. So Q17, do you think there should be special rules to give precedence to certain groups when registering and restricted use TLDs? As I interpret that, that means, so if you're doing dot attorney, that Smith, even though Smith is a big ham, you know, company in Southern Virginia, that Smith, who's unaffiliated with that, may be able to go ahead and register first in dot attorney. If that's what we're asking, then the new version may confuse people. So should TLDs with eligibility restrictions be allowed to give first sunrise to their target audience, e.g. brand owners that also meet the restriction requirement? Brand owners already in, right? Brand owners that are in the trademark clearinghouse. Isn't this in some ways about non-brand owners, and will that change kind of confuse people? Can we go back to the original wording?
Christine, any comments? And I also see Michael's hand up. Maybe Christine first, then Michael, please.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily totally wedded to this idea that you know, of my new wording, but I think the old wording was confusing. So special rules is super vague, and precedents as far as what, before sunrise or during sunrise? And then what does certain groups mean? I think the groups need to be related to the TLD, and they needed to be related to the restricted use TLDs. So when we talk about restricted use TLDs, what we're really talking about are TLDs with eligibility restrictions. So in your scenario, Kathy, so there's a couple of options. One is that you have a first period that says if you are a sunrise, so the very first registration period is for brand owners who meet those use requirements. And actually any registry can kind of do that now. The question is should that be a little bit more specific, right? So we can say that we have an eligibility restriction, and if you have an eligibility restriction and you're a sunrise registrant, and you don't meet the eligibility criteria, it's up to the registry operator if they want to waive the eligibility criteria for the Sunrise applicant. Because if I'm operating .attorney, for instance, I can say, well, Smith Hams, you're not an attorney, so you don't get to use my TLD. You do not meet the restrictions. And ICANN currently doesn't have a blocking mechanism. So basically, Smith Hams is kind of out of luck. A Smith attorney can show up during the Sunrise period if Smith attorney has a trademark that's registered and in the clearinghouse. But Smith attorney would also then be able to participate in general availability if they don't have any sort of trademark clearinghouse registration. What I think we're getting at here is, do we want to offer sort of special groups access or special Sunrise access to certain groups based on their restricted use TLDs or based on their eligibility criteria? So my wording might not have also been a whole lot better, but I was trying to solve for the random vagueness of special rules, precedents, and certain groups. So I'm totally open to other suggestions if that's you know, better for other people.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry, Lori, is my sound still cutting out? I'm sorry. I just switched my microphone up to a little bit closer to my mouth.
Yeah, and Christine, actually, I'm hearing you loud and clear, so I don't know if that might be on Lori's end, but just to Kathy's suggestion, would it be helpful if we just took out the parentheses, that is the one before EG and after requirement, and maybe that's just a change we can make. Christine, please.
So this is Christine. So the other thing I wanted to point out, Kathy, was I think one of the things we're thinking of here is also that scenario that Maxime pointed out about police. So let's say you offer a city TLD. Maybe you say if you offer a specific GOTLD, state and local entities, officially recognized government entities, can get in even before brand owners. So in which case, it's not just for brand owners. We might say there are special rules to give precedence to, you know, government-affiliated groups before brand owners for these .city TLDs. I think one of the challenges with question 17 was trying to word it broadly enough that it would encompass all of the different permutations of specific TLDs that had a lot of eligibility restrictions around them, while at the same time, putting some parameters around it, not just you should be able to do whatever you want. So I'm not sure that crossing out the parentheses solves for the sort of police.city situation. Thanks.
Kathy, please.
Okay. I'm really aware of time, but I appreciate the discussion. That's why I would take brand owners out of the parentheses, because I think here we're trying specifically to talk about permutations like that police and Maxime and variations that don't necessarily give brand owners who happen to have a trademark that matches, but it doesn't fit the registry criteria, the GTLD criteria. So I think by putting brand owners into that parentheses, we're confusing the matter. We're going kind of back to traditional Sunrise. But I could go with either wording of the question, but again, I think the parentheses may not be the example we want to use here. Can we just leave it broad and let people come up with their own scenarios and keep going?
Thanks, Kathy. And Christine is actually agreeing with the change you suggested in the chat.
I wasn't looking at it. Thank you. Great.
Christine, go ahead, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. I'd like to float another suggestion to my own edit, because in that case, we're not actually giving Sunrise access. which is actually the original question 13 doesn't recognize that. I think we probably want to cross that out. Sunrise has a defined meaning for trademark holders, so that's where we can talk first access to their target audience.
Christine, did we lose
you? Looks good. That makes
sorry, sense. I just made an edit. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be transparent here. I just made an edit to the doc on the fly, which is against the rules. So I changed the text to say, should TLDs with eligibility restrictions be allowed to give first access to their target audience? Hopefully I didn't make it even more confusing, but we can maybe analysis group can at least start with that and fix it. I'm not sure. Thanks.
And Kathy, are you okay with that?
Absolutely. And just so you know, Christine is anonymous cheetah. I hope I'm not disclosing anything confidential. I thought that was funny.
Thanks very much.
I'm so excited.
Okay. So I think we've addressed the other suggestions up through to question 26 has just been the note that to have the grid be one grid now for now and in the future, which I think is the suggestion that you'd previously made. So unless there's any concerns from Greg or Stacy on that change with respect to the grids, that actually brings us to the end of the document. Is there anything I might have missed as I'm steaming along here? Then I'm going to suggest in the last 15 minutes or so that we go to the registrants survey rather than trademark because there's maybe fewer potential changes there. And since we do have Rebecca also on the call. So folks want us to go then to the actual slash potential registrant survey, and we'll start at the top there. Kathy has a note. She's deleting Amazon.com in the top of the survey with the top examples of domains. Agreed to delete specific references, plus this is a legacy TLD, replace with food.store. Any concerns about that suggestion? And Christina is saying thanks. Okay, moving through the comments, the question four and the text change, which Rebecca has added in parens, not the exact domain name, but just the top-level domain in which you registered it, e.g., .club.ninja.xyz.love. This is if the respondent is in group A, if you recall, which new GTLDs did you register your domain name in? Any concerns about those changes? Moving to question 5A, Rebecca again, from the more than one respondents, they need to be asked more than once until they are done, e.g., now we'd like to ask you about the first time you received a claims notice. And Christine, please.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine. Hi. Oh, wait. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I don't know what's going on with my headset. Now it's better. Yeah, thanks. Apparently, I didn't see this comment the first time through when I looked at this. I'm a little bit concerned about the more than once thing for two reasons. One is I'm not entirely sure they're going to remember if it was more than once. I think one time would stick in their brain. If it happened 10 times, it might not. Twice maybe would stick in their brain, I guess. But my second question is that I think to the point of, like, making the survey longer than necessary, possibly could you ask a follow-up that says, for subsequent times that you may have viewed the claims notice, did you do anything differently or did anything change? So you sort of ask a summary question that allows them to freeform what might have been different rather than forcing them to go back through all the questions each time. That's just a suggestion to keep it shorter and less confusing, especially for people for whom this isn't sort of their main bread and butter, right? Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Rebecca, please.
Rebecca Teshnet. So I'll defer to the survey experts on this one, but if we should be so lucky as to get a respondent who's actually received more than one, we really need to hear from them. So, I mean, this is really worth spending some effort on. I think it would be fine to include an answer saying, you know, that's all I can remember. You know, I don't remember what I did for the others, or, you know, I did the same thing for the others. But I do think we want to actually push them if we are so lucky as to find one of these. Thank you.
Thank you. And Kathy, please.
And I, this is Kathy. I agree with Rebecca. Just if we are fortunate enough to get registrants who have gone through this process, it's very possible that it's vivid in their thoughts because they would have stopped, hopefully, to think about it. And if it wasn't, then push on. Thanks.
And Greg and Stacey agree with Rebecca on this question. So, and Christine agreed that we'd like to hear from them, just thought open-ended would provide that opportunity with making honoris, but not a hill I'll die on. So, Greg, Stacey, you're okay with where we stand on that, and that's clear?
Yes.
Great. And then in the second bullet under 5A, need choices from below for why they didn't continue. And then I see there are choices that are added. And I see agreement from folks as far as those additions. And including an addition of Q 6C, which is following best describes your understanding of the purpose of claims notice, and various choices there. And I'm just going to ask people to raise your hand if there's anything, any changes in here that anybody has put in, Rebecca, Christine, or otherwise, that you're not agreeing with. And I'm just trying to search for things where there may be questions. Q6, Rebecca's noting in case they feel like they're being asked to incriminate themselves, and she's added some text with respect to that. New 6A, and I'm still just moving through here. Q6C, and obviously there'll need to be some renumbering here. Addition of text to inform one of the existence of the trademark owner with the trademark on a term that matches the domain. And Rebecca, please go ahead.
Rebecca Tashnet. So I appreciate Kathy's intent here in terms of the suggestion in Q6C. I would prefer to keep a distractor there just to, because something that is clearly that we all agree is not true, but that so to actually show whether or not they understand it. Because if someone picks the one that's clearly not true, we actually have important information. So that is why I kind of like to offer me the right to make legal claims on my domain name against others in the future. So I you know, maybe we should, maybe we could make it, you know, select all that apply, but I kind of like having a distractor there. So I would prefer to keep something. If there are other thoughts on what the distractor should be, I'm cool with that. But that's why I wanted it left. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy, please.
Then I defer. I was looking at it differently, but in the interest of time and closure, I defer. Thanks.
Thank you. Then we'll reinstate that text. Offer the right to make legal claims on my domain name against others in the future, but Christine, please go ahead.
Thank you. No objection there. Mine was the next or two bullets down. I think Rebecca had deleted the inform me that someone else previously registered my domain name point, and I think it's actually pretty fair if you were maybe had an eighth grade education and you were registering a domain name and it showed sort of trademarks. You might think that the domain name is suddenly unavailable. Oh, look, someone else already has it. You know, you want to get this instead or something. I'm wondering if that would be sufficiently a deterrent if they thought that that would be the domain is suddenly unavailable, because especially if it's being shown right before checkout. Oh, yeah, sorry, you don't. Yes, you can't have this. So I actually am wondering, I'd love it if Rebecca had a different interpretation of that to figure out, you know, is this question valid or not? Because I think this is a legit reason someone might abandon their registration when they see a claims notice. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. I have Rebecca and then Kathy.
Rebecca Tashnet. So I thought about this as a distractor. The reason that it makes less sense to me is just that I think even at checkout, they just told you that it was available. So I feel like this one is sort of is actually almost not good enough. Like I think for many people, it will be clearly wrong. So that is why I preferred the other one. But I think it would be great to hear from Greg and Stacey. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
Yeah, I think we agreed to delete this last time because you probably wouldn't get here, you know, to the trademark claims notice if someone else already had the domain name. You wouldn't have moved to this point in the process of reading the trademark claims. But happy to defer to everyone else.
And thank you, Christine.
It's Greg, I'm fine removing it.
Thanks, Greg. And Christine?
Thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, that's fine. I wanted to just explain my understanding of the question and how I thought it was legitimate, but I can also see how it's really viewed as a distractor and it kind of doesn't, you know, it's kind of a clearly stupid answer. So I'll withdraw my comment. Thanks.
Thank you. And then moving to question 8, and the text-only display option selected in question 7. Rebecca's note is, as I previously noted, I'm opposed to showing these all at once, absent a reason founded in survey practice. They should be shown in rotation and one at a time.
And this is Greg. I think that's a really good point, so we can make sure that that's coded.
Great. Thank you. And then question 9, there's some strikeout and some new text suggested by Rebecca. She says original language confusing, creates an issue of compared to what, and Christine says much prefer the rewrite. And that brings us to the end of this document. Is there anything I might have missed? Clearly we have 6 minutes left, and we have a fairly large survey we have not touched on yet, and that's the brand trademark owners. So, how would we like to proceed with the brand trademark owner survey? We certainly can have Greg and Stacey be working on the finalizing the other surveys. And I see, Michael, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it in a couple of days, but I would be very interested in what not so much Greg and Stacey, but others in this group who know the issues that we're trying to address. If there are questions that you believe we can either truncate or remove from that survey. And that's something that I'll do as well to go through it. So I think that would be sort of the first part, and then the second part would be addressing those questions that would remain. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And I think we also discussed earlier today about just in general allowing people the option to breaking up the survey into sections and allowing people to take a section of the survey to address the length. But, yes, the survey has more comments. Christine is saying, what about a call on Friday with, say, homework of people to look at that trademark survey in the meantime? What is the availability do we have for folks on Friday? Say, I think we have used that noon 1600 UTC slot previously, recognizing that, as we all hate, that would be very short notice for a meeting. And Lori says, like, we need more homework. Yep, sorry, Lori.
This is Michael.
Say that again. You said that fast, Julie. About the time options? I'm sorry. I
was reading your comment, Lori, because we need more homework.
No, I'm asking if you wouldn't mind, Lori, for the record, if you wouldn't mind repeating the time options again. The Friday I got, but then did you say Tuesday as well as the other option? I just missed that part of the sentence.
I just said previously we've used the time of 1600 UTC on Friday as a possible meeting time, and I guess I'm asking whether or not folks here would be able to do that, given that it's very short notice. And I noted, Greg, that you cannot attend, but Stacey can. Christine says I can move my Friday around to accommodate.
This is Rebecca Tesnett. Sorry, I had to leave the chat, but I can do that too.
Michael says he can attend. Eastern time, Kathy, that would be noon. I see multiple attendees are typing. And Kathy says, thanks, I can attend. Lori says she'll be with her CEO. Lori, maybe we could ask if you could instead do homework offline. Hate to suggest that. And maybe put any comments you might have into the survey if you can't attend at that time. Okay. No, it's hard for Susan to dare we suggest 11. That actually runs into a conflict with the staff and co-chairs normally have a call at that crosses over that time on Fridays, and I think we have one scheduled.
Right, and I'll just add, this is Kathy, that it's hard to get Brian at other times on Friday, Brian Beckham.
Precisely. I think we'll have to keep it at noon and see if we can get Susan or not. But we could, in our notes, suggest that if folks have constraints, that they then try to go into the Google Doc and provide any comments that they may have in the Google Doc that we can then address on Friday. Again, seeing some folks typing.
Yeah.
But so I am going to suggest then that we go ahead and we'll get that on the schedule, send around the invites, we'll get the notes out, and the action item is for everyone to please take a look at that trademark survey in advance of Friday's meeting. So thank you all. We are now just about at the bottom of the hour, so I do appreciate all your hard work today, and thank you very much, and thanks also for your willingness to meet on Friday.
And thank you, Julie, for chairing a great meeting. And thank you to Greg and Stacy, of course, as well. Thank you for your time. And thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Have a great afternoon. Bye-bye.